Art of Joyful Living. We are your hosts, Cindy Briolotta
and Linda Cassell, coming to you live from New York City and Washington, D.C. Each week, we bring you inspiring leading-edge ideas, powerful strategies, and exciting resources
to support you in creating so much more of the prosperity and abundance, great relationships, vibrant health, passionate work, deep meaning, and long-term happiness and joy that you want in all areas of your life. And now, let's get started with the show. Hello, and welcome to the Art of Joyful Living. I'm your host, Cindy Briolotta.
And I'm your host, Linda Cassell. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. Today's program is pre-recorded, so you will not be able to access the chat room or call in with questions, but you can leave comments at our blog, and we hope you do. That's at www.ajlradio.com. We love hearing from you. Today, we are so happy to have the internationally acclaimed speaker, author, relationship expert, and founder of Designer Life, Bruce Musick, as our special guest. This is actually the first time we've interviewed Bruce, and his topic, Fearless Intimacy, is a new one for him and a new one for us. However, if you've tuned in because you know him through his great work with Designer Life, don't worry. We're going to leave time to address some questions that some of you emailed to us about that topic as well. And in fact, we'll be telling you much more about Bruce later in the show and how you can connect with him through his website, and I'll say it now, at www.brucemusick.com. We'll be announcing that and more later on. But you know what? We don't want to wait another minute to get started because we have a lot of information to cover. So, Bruce, we just thank you for being with us today and welcome to the Art of Joyful Living.
Thank you so much. It's such a treat to be here. It's taken a while.
Yes, it has, but now we finally connected and we are thrilled. So, Bruce, we would love to know something about your own personal journey. How did you come to be doing this work?
Well, I think I've always had a fascination with the mind. And when you say this work, I'm just going to kind of assume that to be transformational type work, because that's the kind of work that I've done my whole life.
Right.
And I remember in 2002, I was a music producer at the time, and I just hit the career in South Africa. I'm originally born and bred in South Africa. And at the time, I'd just written a one-hit song. And from the outside, it looked as if my life was just perfect. I had a beautiful girlfriend. I had a successful recording studio. I spent my days playing guitar and writing songs. And it just looked like I had this picture-perfect life. But on the inside, I was deeply depressed. And at the time, I didn't know what to do about my depression. And somebody recommended I go do a personal development seminar. And I went and attended a seminar called the Landmark Forum, which was formerly the S Training. And during that seminar, I saw this man on stage, the guy who was leading the program. And I saw this man transform 300 people's lives in 3 days. And I thought to myself, wow, that would be amazing. I want to do that with the rest of my life. And I promptly quit being a musician and went into training to leading transformational seminars, which really took much longer than just a couple of years. But around the same time, one of the things that came out of that seminar, one of the most transformational experiences that really got me to the work that I'm doing now, was I was challenged by the seminar leader to conquer my fear of black people. Now, just to create some context, I grew up in apartheid South Africa. So I grew up in a country where racial divide was legal. I remember, I'd catch a bus to school, and there'd be a bus for the white kids and a bus for the black kids. Mm-hmm. I remember on the beach in our little town, there was an enormous, great big fence, wire fence down the middle, And the beautiful white sandy part was for the white people, and the small rocky part in the corner was for the black people. So that's kind of how I grew up relating to black people, was that there was something different about them, and we all locked our doors whenever we climbed into the car because the car might get hijacked, and we knew it wasn't a white person who was going to hijack the car. So I grew up with this fear that black people were going to hurt me. And as I was kind of in the seminar, the seminar leader was talking about the racial divide in South Africa and how even though apartheid has ended, it's still in the minds of our culture. And until we transform our belief systems about the other cultures in our country, we'll never transform the country. It'll only just be a surface cosmetic transformation. And I'm going to cut a very long story short, but essentially I was challenged to conquer my fear of black people, and the guy promised me that this would cure my depression. And I couldn't possibly understand how what he was asking me to do, which was to go and live in a ghetto to go and get to know my other African community, I couldn't understand how that could possibly conquer my depression or have anything to do with the crap out of me, to be honest with you. But 2 weeks later, I was moving into a beat-up old shanty town that was called, had the nickname the Kak Yard, which is an Afrikaans translation for the term maybe the crap yard, directly translated, because it was so filled with drug dealers and crime. And somebody in the seminar lived around there and knew of an empty house and got me the keys and said, if you want to go and live there, you know, you can have the keys, go. So I arrived, and I'll never forget this day. I pulled up in my pickup truck and with all my boxes in the back to move in, thinking I'd stay there for a month. And it was a Monday morning at about 10 a.m., and the street was pretty deserted. And as I climbed out of the pickup truck, I thought, let me unload as fast as possible so that nobody sees me, because I'm the only white person for about 5 miles around, surrounded by 100,000 black people, which for me was just the most terrifying thought in the world. But I knew I had to face this fear, and I was taking it. I was going to take a chance. I felt like, okay, I'm old enough to look after myself. So I start unloading my boxes, and I go to the house to get the second box. And as I come out, a few people have gathered around my car, and I kind of look at them, and they look at me, and they're not quite sure what to make of a white guy in their ghetto. And so I go back into the second box, and I come back out, and a few minutes later, I come out, and there must be 20, 25 people standing around the car who've kind of just come out of the houses to see what on earth a white guy is doing in their ghetto. And a woman, which I later found out was my neighbor, Maureen, she came up to me and she said, Mlungu. Now, Mlungu is the word that means whitey in their local tongue, which is Xhosa. And she says in Xhosa, she says, Mlungu, what are you doing here? And I look at her and I thought, well, you know, I've come this far. I'm not going to lie about why I'm here. So I said, I recently discovered I'm a racist and I'm terrified of black people and I've come here to conquer my fear of black people. And you could have heard a pin drop for about like 10 seconds, or what felt like an hour to me, because I was convinced the next step was somebody would pull out a gun and shoot me. But anyway, you could have heard a pin drop. And this kind of exclamation, which is typically African, that goes like this, you know, when a lot of the African people in my country are kind of to show surprise, they'll say, "How?" And I just heard this like, "How?" as these people shook their heads in disbelief, thinking, "What on earth is this guy doing?" And then she said, "Can I help you carry your boxes into the house?" And at that point, I was like, wow, that's really sweet of you. But I thought, if I say yes, they're going to steal everything I own. If I say no, they're going to think I don't trust them, which I don't, and they're probably going to hurt me. So I'll just take the lesser of two evils and I'll say yes. So I said yes, and they carried all my boxes into my house. And, of course, the thing was stolen. And a party ensued that welcomed me into their community. For 4 hours, I was completely overwhelmed. They piled into my house before I knew it. Beer was arriving, and somebody with a ghetto blaster walked in, cranking music, and this enormous welcome on a Monday morning. And because all these people were unemployed, ensued, and I was welcomed into the township like a prodigal son returning home into this ghetto. And I learned many, many amazing things that day. But probably the most important thing that came out of that day was that within the space of an hour or so, 28 years of racial conditioning evaporated. And I learned that, which is the premise of the work that I teach today, that anything that appears to be not love is just a misunderstanding. And I'll say it again, anything that appears to be not love is just a misunderstanding. And how I got this was as I spent this month there, I realized how wrong I was about the African culture, how many stories I'd made up in my mind through the culture I'd been brought up in about what they were about, you know, that Africans were dangerous and that I'd be hurt. And, like, I mean, I'd be embarrassed to even share more. Like, I had some really, you know, disempowering views on the black culture from my upbringing. And it transformed overnight. And at the end of 1 month, in fact, I need to tell you one more short, quick story in this. On that same, in the next morning when I woke up, I spent my first night there. The next morning I woke up and I took my breakfast out onto the street to eat it on the sidewalk, because I discovered that it's tradition in the ghetto. Everyone kind of comes out and eats in front of their houses. So I was sitting on the sidewalk eating my breakfast, and this little, about probably 7 or 8 year old or 6 year old school kid walks past me with a satchel on his back, walking to the train station or to school. And he walks past me and he looks up and he sees me. He takes a double take and he looks at me and he says, "Umlungu, do you live there?" And at this point, I was starting to feel like kind of proud of the fact that I was the only white guy and I actually lived here. So I was like, "Yeah, I live here." And he looked down at his feet, like confused. And then he looked up at me again and he said, "Welcome home." And in that moment, tears just streamed down my face, and it was one of the most transformative moments where I really felt the love of these people living in their community. And in the end, I ended up staying 6 months living there as the only white guy. I couldn't leave after a month. Firstly, the community wouldn't let me. They were like, "You've just arrived. We're having far too much fun. We're getting to know you too." And I discovered they were equally scared of me. When I arrived, they thought I was undercover police, coming to bust all the drug deals in the area, and they were equally scared of me. One of them missed 100,000. I was like, how could they possibly be scared of me? But when the stories came out over the months, they were too, and I could undo their misunderstandings and get them back to love. And so where that's all culminated, to kind of answer your question in a long roundabout way, has been that what I do now is I work with people and couples to help them in a relationship. Love between each other in a relationship is just a misunderstanding. And that's the end of that long story.
What a beautiful story, right, Cindy?
Absolutely. Wow, yeah. I got chills listening to that.
I know. And actually, Bruce, as you were talking, and Cindy, please jump in, what struck me is, somebody else could have done exactly what you did, could have moved in there and not had the change of heart that you did. And I think that the factor that distinguishes you is that you went with the desire to change. Mm-hmm. You wanted to get rid of your depression, right? And somebody told you, get rid of your racist ideas, and that's going to cure your depression.
Which
does that
it
make
did,
sense?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes, exactly. I was desperate, too. So there's a big part of this that, you know, I've learned in the transformative work that I've done over the years, that a lot of my greatest breakthroughs have come from the pit of despair. And I now almost welcome hitting rock bottom, because I know on the other side of rock bottom, as painful as rock bottom is you know, the joy and the light of love again. But the worst part is teetering around rock bottom. It's when you're not willing to face your fear and go all the way down to rock bottom, and you kind of teeter around the dregs of the bottom, not quite hitting the bottom. And I spent a lot of time doing that in my life too, and that sucked. So I like to think of myself as a teacher who accelerates people's pain so that it gets so intense so quickly that they're forced to break through the other side.
Wow.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's amazing how many times we really need that pain in order to shift. You know, we can, if we're not really feeling it, then we don't have the catalyst or we don't have the motivation to change. So that's pretty amazing that you are in the business of accelerating people's pain. Love it.
I don't use that in my marketing.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good marketing message, but I love it. So, Bruce, these days you're talking about fearless intimacy, and I love the sound of that, and I would love to know, what is that? What is fearless intimacy?
Thank you for asking. Well, at the moment what it is a working title for a book that I'm writing, and it came out of me hitting rock bottom again last year in a relationship with a woman that I love dearly, who ended up leaving me twice in the year. Mm. And we spent about 6 months apart trying to get on with our lives, and neither of us could. And I'm very happy to say we were back together and deeper in love than we ever were before.
Mm.
And what ended up happening was, throughout the process of giving up everything, I don't say everything, what we had to give up in order to make the relationship work was all our expectations and projections of how the other person should be, how relationships should look, and how they should work. And it forced me into a deep internal process where I let go of even needing to have my partner live in the same country as me. So what happened is she left me and moved on to another country to get away from me, basically, and start her life again. And she still lives there right now. And one of the things I swore was that I would never be in a long-distance relationship. I love physical touch too much to be apart that long. And I had to give that up in order to be with her and respect her wishes that she really wanted to live in New York, and I really wanted to live on a beach on an island in the Caribbean. And we've made it work. And through working through a lot of our issues and therapy, we discovered that when time was worst, when we were really fighting with each other and we were convinced that the other person was an alien from a different planet, and that, or the other person was a certified psychopath, one of the two, when we unpacked it all again later from the perspective, okay, if anything that isn't love is just a misunderstanding, then clearly what's going on here is some kind of misunderstanding. We got to the root of so many of the things that caused us to break up, and when we stood in each other's shoes and could see it from their perspective, I was so able to see from Chelsea's perspective, that's her name, why she had chosen to say and do the things she had done, and she could see from my perspective why I had chosen to say and do the things I had done, and the two of us were able to see the loving, positive intentions behind each other's actions. And I could go, oh, if I was in your shoes, I know I might have done the same thing given your past. And we both had several aha moments where we got present to, wow, this whole thing, this whole drama was just a huge misunderstanding. And had we not had had I not had the absolutely fierce determination to hold on to the relationship, it probably would have ended just like every previous relationship we had ended. And as a result of coming through this, we've grown more and more close and more intimate. And when I say fearless intimacy, why I like to put the term fearless in there, it's not that it's intimacy without fear. It's that it requires the attitude of being fearless in order to grow that intimate with somebody, where you get to creating a relationship where your communication and your loving is so intimate, so strong, so juicy, so deliciously tender, that you can open up every part of your heart and soul to your partner and let them in and let them know you completely and experience being known completely. But it's often from the couples that I know, the few couples that I know that are actually living in relationships this way, it's often the scariest thing and feels like death, because it's like ripping the mask of your personality off your face in order to expose the light of your soul that lies behind.
Mm-hmm.
And that process of ripping off the mask and dissolving our identities is feels like death, and it requires almost like a fearless courage to be able to face oneself, and certainly for me and Chelsea to be able to face ourselves in that way. But now we're able to relate kind of essence to essence rather than mask to mask, or personality to personality, or ego to ego, or Bruce to Chelsea. We can have these moments, and of course this is, it's not like this 24 hours a day, otherwise I think we'd probably all be enlightened and not be on the planet. But certainly when, you know, I've never had these experiences for sustained periods in any other relationship before, since we started doing the practices that I'm beginning to teach. And how I came about teaching it was, I went through a midlife crisis during this whole time, trying to figure out what my purpose was on the planet after having spent many years teaching people about the law of attraction and the mind and neuro-linguistic programming. And I knew, just like when my music career was done, that that career was done too, and I was trying to figure out what was next. And I realized, really, what I wanted to do is share the message that anything that isn't love is a misunderstanding, and help couples. So that's kind of how that all played out, and that's how fearless intimacy plays out for me. And the book title may change along the way, but that's what it is for the moment. That's how I can best describe it.
Well, you said that so poetically, Bruce. And when you talked about ripping off the mask, and I'm guessing that when people listen to this, they're going to want to know, what does that mean? And I'm guessing that two people have to be willing to do that at the same time, right?
Right. And I think one person can do it alone and can induce the motivation in the other to do the same. I think it's hard to stand before somebody completely naked in front of you, I mean naked metaphorically,
mm-hmm.
and not, you know, take off a few of your clothes yourself. There's something so tender and vulnerable about somebody sharing themselves that they trust you enough to be able to open up and share themselves in a tender and vulnerable, open way that it inspires usually the person on the other side to soften and to want to open up more. So I don't think it's a prerequisite that you both do it together. Certainly with Chelsea, she was adamant. She never wanted to be in a relationship with me again, so much so she'd moved to another country. And I went and kind of jumped on a plane a few weeks later and put a stake in the ground and, you know, kind of told her I wasn't going anywhere ever, and was totally vulnerable and emotionally naked with her. And it softened her. So I think it can start. Like, somebody's got to go first. You know, I think even, you know, if you use a metaphor of that came to my head right now, music, you know, the conductor's got to go first. The conductor starts, and then the band, the orchestra plays. And I think in somebody's got to play the conductor at some point and be willing to go first. And very often I've noticed in relationships that's the person that always goes first. And sometimes that's just the way that it is. And I know that sometimes causes challenges in relationships. I've heard a lot of couple partners in couples saying, why do I always have to start? Why do I always have to initiate everything? And I usually say back, because that's what you do. That's obviously your role. Doesn't mean that the other person's less interested. Somebody's got to go first. So I think, yeah. I mean, ideally you want both partners practicing this way, otherwise it doesn't work. But somebody has to go first, which means probably one of the partners isn't going to be fully open there at the same time and needs to be opened a little bit.
So, you know, Bruce, the payoff sounds so magnificent, right? To be relating to another person as essence, really at the kind of at a soul level. This is, wow, that's beautiful, right? So it really sounds like the payoff for doing this is amazing. But I think most people who've lived on the planet for any length of time have been hurt previously in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So coming with that kind of baggage from the past, how does one begin even to allow oneself to become that vulnerable?
That's such a beautiful question. Thank you. And you're so right. we all come with our baggage from the past, and it's the scariest stuff often to deal with. So I think the first thing that needs to be put in place is what I call a container of trust that allows your partner or both of you to experience feeling held and safe. And how Chelsea and I have done this is through a series of agreements that kind of create the context or the container in which our relationship can grow and thrive kind of pollinate itself. And how one creates a container of, I'll just give you an example of some of the agreements. Like one of the agreements we have is that we would never break up angry. If we were going to break, we're going to break up in love with each other. So that means we would have had to have got to, we still completely love each other, but the relationship has reached its natural end, and we both are no supporting and growing each other to the next level.
And you know what, Bruce?
No longer exists.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you repeat that again? Because I think we just we lost you for a minute.
Sure. So one of the relationship commitments Chelsea and I have is that nobody leaves the relationship. We cannot break up without being in love. We never break up in anger. If the relationship is going to end, it's not going to ever end in anger. That we will continue, when we break up, we want to have reached the point where we love each other dearly and we're no longer committed to supporting each other's growth anymore. And we have an agreement that once one person says to the other person they want to leave, the other person, the person who initiated wanting to leave, agrees to do 3 months whatever the partner chooses to have them do to support the relationship continuing. So it might be, let's say Chelsea chooses to leave me, and she comes to me and she says, honey, I want to leave you. This relationship's no longer working for me. I want to move on. At that point, I can say to her, okay, we've got a 3-month trial period now. I'm going to request that you join me in couples therapy once a week for the next 3 months, and that you go and take a week off on a retreat in the mountains to get really clear on what you want. And she agrees to do that. So we have this kind of like this clause that creates the safety that nobody can just up and off and leave, which is part of our container, like one of the many agreements that make our container safe. And I guess what has to be there too is some implicit trust that the other person is not just going to up and off. A lot of it comes down to communication and being heard, having the experience of being heard and accepted by your partner for just as you are, which in theory and practice is very, very different. You know, you read in lots of self-help books, you know, one of the keys to love is accept your partner just the way they are. But how do you accept your partner just the way they are when they're mad at you and they're blaming you? Or how do you accept your partner just the way that they are when they want to move to a different country and tell you that they never want to be with you again? How do you do that? Mm-hmm. And what we found is that through unpacking all of our misunderstandings, we've really learned to trust that whatever the motivations are behind, they're coming from some kind of positive intention. And when we can figure out and get to the cause and to the root source of the positive intention, it becomes so easy to love and accept the person just the way they are. And when they feel accepted and loved just the way they are, the trust is there and the safety is there for your partner, you and your partner, to expose those deep fears, those deep wounds, and use the relationship then as almost an emotional hospital to repair your childhood traumas that you may have been through.
Wow. Cindy, would you agree that this not only sounds so loving, but it's also quite romantic to think about you agree to never break up angry? I love that.
Yeah, that's amazing, because most people do break up angry, for sure.
Yeah, Bruce, you better hurry up and write that book, because I will tell you, every woman in the world is going to want to buy that book.
I'm definitely a romantic. I'll give you that. And I have to credit my friend, a relationship coach, Annie Lala, who shared that with me in her relationship with her husband. Forgive me, there's a little baby screaming outside. So there's a friend of mine, Annie Lala, who is this incredible relationship coach, and she told me this, you know, never break up angry. So we thought, that's such a great agreement.
Wow.
We've got to put that in our relationship. And I'm closing the door here. There's a kid screaming, playing outside. Oh, boy.
That's all right. Background, it's okay.
So, Linda, I think this might be an opportune time for us to take a short break.
Okay, so Bruce, here's what we're going to do. As Cindy said, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, I know in your earlier work you've talked and written about having a magnetic personality, and we'd love to find out what you mean by having a magnetic personality. How do you get it, and does it play a role in creating fearless intimacy in a relationship? So
wow,
how about that?
Remember
when we
having,
come back.
Never having said that, but I'll figure something out.
All right. If you're just joining us, we want to remind you that today's show has been pre-recorded, so neither the phone lines nor the chat room will be open today. And we always like to take this opportunity to tell you how much we appreciate your support for this show. You and the tremendously gifted guest experts who appear on our show have helped to make our program one of Blog Talk Radio's top 20 most popular self-help programs, and we give you a huge thank you for that. So if you love our show as much as we love bringing it to you, there are lots of ways to share the love. You can let your friends know about us by clicking the share button on any episode, or you can tweet about us, send a message to your Facebook friends, or post to dozens of social media sites. You can also click the RSS link on our show page to get automatic updates from Blog Talk Radio. You can do all of that at our show page, which you can reach by visiting our blog at www.ajlradio.com and clicking on the Listen to the Show button. And if you want to get a message from us each week before the show so that you don't miss any of our wonderful guests, you can just enter your name and email address at our blog, and we will keep you informed of all the wonderful guests that we have coming up. And speaking of wonderful guests, today we are so delighted to have Bruce Music as our special guest. And I'm hoping you're feeling as inspired as I am by this conversation. I just keep getting chills. It's really amazing. Bruce had the good fortune to be introduced to the innate powers of the mind at a very young age. And ever since, he's not only mastered these powers to design a life that he loves, and now a relationship that is amazing, but he's also taught thousands to do the same. He knows how to create the life he envisions. He perfected powerful techniques that he used to manifest everything from writing a song that went to number one, as he mentioned earlier, a one-month motorcycle trip through India to raise money for Indian orphans, to owning the recording studio of his dreams, and now to building fearlessly intimate relationships. So if you want to know how you can work with Bruce or purchase some of his amazing programs and products, visit his website at www.brucemusic.com. And that is Bruce, B-R-U-C-E, music, M-U-Z-I-K.com. And you'll find lots of wonderful free resources as well as links to some of the fascinating talks he's given at TED conferences around the country. So we know that after you hear this show, you're going to want to hear much more from Bruce. And we know that just like us, you'll be eagerly anticipating the publication of his wonderful new book. So let's get back to our show. You are listening.
You're so good for my ego.
You are listening to The Art of Joyful Living with our special guest, Bruce Music. So, Bruce, let's pick up on the question that Linda mentioned before the break. What does it mean to have a magnetic personality, and does that play a role in creating fearless intimacy in a relationship?
Okay, great. I now know what you meant by magnetic personality. Yeah, in the, what feels like my former life, I was teaching the law of attraction, and ever since I was a kid, I was just fascinated by psychokinesis, how to move things with your mind, and what was possible with the mind. And after a while, I discovered that there were, you know, after a lot of studying and reading, when I get interested in a topic, I totally immerse myself in it and kind of stop everything else in my life until I've kind of figured it out. And one of the things I discovered was that our minds are a whole lot more powerful than we give them credit for, and that in fact they can become reality creation machines or reality attracting machines. And I'm not going to go into the science behind it because that would be a whole other topic and call. But what I mean by a magnetic personality is somebody who's able to attract opportunities and circumstances in their life just by almost gently wishing them and welcoming them and inviting them in. And you've probably heard a lot about visualization in the past before and goal setting and manifestation. Well, that's a lot of what I do. And by magnetic personality, the term I'm using is to describe somebody who attracts what they want rather than somebody who necessarily goes out and strives. And I think both strategies work together, and except that we've just been taught one of them. So when we in our culture grow up, we're taught to go out and get what you want and make it happen by doing things. And that's a very masculine way of achieving. And given that both of men and women have a masculine and a feminine part of them, the feminine counterpart to that, I believe, is this attracting what you want. And if you look at how in relationships men go about getting a relationship, men go out, generally speaking, and chase or hunt or pursue a woman. You don't very often find women pursuing men. What do women do? They attract what they want. They work on themselves, and they're put on makeup and their beauty to shine and radiate their light out into the world, and the men are attracted to that, and of course, you know, pursuing and chasing. And I feel like it's a beautiful metaphor for manifestation in your life, because there's two ways to approach it, and you can do both. And very often we just focus on one. How that works in relationships, I mean, I'll just share what my experience of how I feel like I've manifested this relationship of my dreams, and how I used a couple of manifesting techniques to resume my relationship with Chelsea and turn it into the greatest relationship I've ever had. And some of these may be familiar to you, some of them may not be. One of the things I did was I got very clear on what I wanted in terms of a relationship. And one of the questions I get asked a lot as a law of attraction coach is, Bruce, I want to attract my dream partner, and I know who it is. Should I be visualizing that person? And I mean, my answer is usually no, because you don't, you know, that person may not be interested in you and they may not be on their life path. And when you tend to focus on one person and having that one person to the exclusion of all others, there's this desperate energy that goes along with that, this kind of needy energy. And that energy is repulsive to not only the universe, but also to men and women. So what I recommend people do is which they don't like this answer, of course, because they want that person only. So they go find another law of attraction coach who will tell them that, yes, they can attract that person. what I suggest people do is write down what are all the beautiful qualities that they love about the person they're attracted to. And then imagine those qualities in the person they're going to visualize when they're doing the visualization. And what I did was I wrote all those qualities down on a stake. And I went down to the beach in front of the house, and we have palm trees in front of the house that the branches always fall off. And I found this kind of palm tree branch and sanded it down. And it was probably about a foot and a half long. And I took out a felt tip marker, and I wrote down every one of these qualities: courage, tenderness, romantic, commitment, sexy, passionate, like all these qualities. I wrote it down on the stake and to remind myself. And really what these are, there's nothing mystical about having a stake. But the way the mind works is that the more you can remind your mind what to focus on, especially first thing in the morning when you wake up, the more it becomes activated in order to filter those things in your reality. Kind of like the example that most teachers use. If you've ever decided that perhaps you wanted to buy a brand new red Nissan, suddenly you see red Nissans everywhere driving around. Same thing like this. When your mind is programmed to focus on a particular set of qualities or traits in a partner, it'll start to notice those all around, whereas before it wouldn't have showed them to you because you're receiving 400 billion bits of information to your brain every second, which we are. Your mind can't process all of those at once, so it has to filter out a lot of them. So what happens is it kind of opens your filters to the things you need to see in order to attract what it is you're wanting to attract into your life. So this steak for me was something that sat next to my bed, and I actually would pack it in my suitcase whenever I went traveling, that this is what I was standing for. Whether it was with Chelsea or whether it was another woman, this was the kind of relationship I wanted, which I now have. And I have this I mean, I think many people have this experience of life. I have this strange experience that every morning when I wake up, I forget who I am. And by that, what I mean is every morning I wake up and I might have gone to bed feeling like a rock star. Like, I know who I am. I'm Bruce, the speaker and the motivational guy and the guy who, you know, who inspires people to live great lives. And then I wake up the next morning and I wake up and I'm like, oh, I've got to make breakfast. I've got to go to the gym. Oh, life sucks. I'm like, what do you mean life sucks? You live on a beach on an island in paradise. And I have to remind myself who I am, because very often I'll wake up and my mind forgets. It's like rebooting a computer after you've used it for too long, especially if you're using a Windows machine. You know, if you've opened too many applications, the computer has to slow down, and you have to reboot it and remind the computer who it is again, that it actually can go a little bit faster, so it can go faster. So I think of these little reminders, the steak just being one of them, as a way to focus my mind. And I usually have all these little reminders next to my bed or reminders on my cell phone that go of reminding me about the things that I want in my life and why I want them and who I am. I even have and this is what I mean by magnetic personality, because I'm always reminding myself, I tend to magnetize or attract the things that I want because my mind's on the lookout for that every day. I've reminded my mind. Mm. I have a little appointment in my Outlook calendar on my computer that I read every morning. And in this little appointment, I've written down, it takes about 5 minutes, all the things that I stand for in life, what I believe about the world, what I believe about myself. I believe that anything's possible. I believe that anything that isn't love is just a misunderstanding. All my core beliefs and the ways I want to see myself in an empowered way, I have these all written down. And every time I think of a new one or adjust an old one, I update that appointment in my calendar. And through waking up every morning and going to my computer and opening this and reading this as a practice within the first half an hour of waking up, I'm always reminded of who I am. And it's a phenomenally powerful little technique that keeps me focused on where I'm going and what I'm about and stops me from falling back into my old default ways of thinking and feeling, which very often have resulted in the past in me not exactly being happy, like the depression before I moved to the ghetto in 2002. That's a little bit about that in a roundabout way.
but you just gave us two great strategies. One, writing down all of the qualities about this person, and then, you know, writing your core beliefs in your Outlook calendar. But I just want to go back to what you said earlier, because I think it's so important when you were talking about desperate energy, that if you focus on that one person, that is the one person for you, it creates a kind of neediness that is repulsive to the universe. And I think it's the very same thing that happens when someone may have lost a position, so they're now looking for a job, right? And they think they have found the job, and then everything, all of the energy is focused on, I've got to have this job. And you're right, it does create a sense of desperation that's not attractive.
Yes, absolutely. And if any of your listeners want to find out more about this, I've actually created a whole video on this called The Neediness Cure. And if you go to my blog, brucemusic.com, there's a little search bar on the right-hand side. If you type in the search bar, The Neediness Cure, the blog post should come up, and there's a video in there, and I spend 10 minutes talking about this and what to do about it, so it might be useful for some of your readers.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's amazing, because it's true. I mean, nothing is more repulsive than desperation. It's almost like you can almost smell it. Weird.
And repulsive to attracting anything, whether it's money or, like you were saying, a job or anything. I heard a wonderful little technique from a friend of mine, who's a hypnotist, and he says what he does with his clients is he gets them, the clients who want more money in their life, he gets them to save money that they commit never to spend ever in their whole life. They will never spend this money. This is just A, to get them in the habit of saving. So they put aside maybe $1 or $5 a day. But B, he said what happens is they start to build this financial cushion, and they start to believe that they have some wealth and that they can see the money growing. And because they have this financial cushion, even though they've agreed never ever to spend it, psychologically what that does, it gives them this this feeling of feeling abundant. And from that space of feeling abundant, they begin to see opportunities differently and recognize opportunities that they may not have before, and communicate and interact with people and business people in a way that's abundant and confident and magnetic, rather than a way that's desperate and needy. So instead of repelling, they start to attract the very opportunities that create them more money, other than the money that they're never going to spend. And I thought that was great, to have an idea to save money that you will never, ever, ever, ever spend, no matter what. I thought it was a very powerful little technique.
Brilliant. We'll start using that. Amazing.
Yes, we will.
So, Bruce, I also loved what you said when you were talking about the fact that you wrote down the qualities that you really wanted it embodied in your relationship on a stake. I think when we're talking about really deepening the intimacy in a relationship, I think that can be a way for you to really focus on what you love most about your partner, because you did it while you were already in relationship, right? Not when you were looking for a relationship. Did I get that right?
I did it while we were broken up, wanting
right.
to get her back, and then
right.
realizing that if I tried to get her back, that would never work. I needed to, you know, figure out what my next relationship would look like.
Mm.
Yeah. So I was
right.
single at the time, yeah.
And so you were focusing really on everything that you loved about her.
Yes. I was like, I want another Chelsea.
Right.
I think we need to make a movie about this, Bruce. You know, I mean, forget the book. I think this is a movie.
It would be dramatic.
Dramatic and romantic. And actually, I wanted to go back to the very beginning when you were first talking about relationships. You know, everything when we start out in a relationship starts out just wonderful and loving and rosy and positive and exciting and passionate. And then you talked about something happens and you wake up one day and you realize that both people are expecting things out of each other that they're not getting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hesitating to ask this question because it's such a big question, but we can ask you because you're Bruce Music. What have you found? I mean, what happens in that in-between space where, you know, the excitement of a new relationship, a new love, and then the disappointment?
Oh, beautiful question. And thank you for asking it, because it's going to get me to be able to share the things I never got to share the first time around. So I believe that the people we're attracted to are the people who represent the good and bad parts of both of our parents. And this is not my original thought. This comes from Dr. Harville Hendricks, one of the world's greatest relationship therapists. And what ends up happening is we fall in love with somebody's, when we're in the honeymoon stage, we fall in love with all our partner's good qualities, and we're looking for their good qualities only. And we're presenting a bit of a mock our partners, because we want our partners to like us. So we kind of overemphasize all their qualities. They overemphasize all their good qualities. And what happens is after a while, once we get used to each other, the very things that initially attracted us to them now become the very things that annoy us about them. And what ends up happening is the reason they annoy us is they begin to trigger, after a while, our incomplete childhood experiences or our childhood wounds, the stuff that all of us have to some degree, that primal, fundamental, like, things, childhood wounds, maybe like fear of rejection or fear of abandonment or I'm not good enough or I'm boring or I'm a failure, whatever. Like, at our core of our personalities is one of these that our personality was built around to compensate for. And when these beliefs or these kind of core wounds that lie under the surface of our mask, so to speak, to continue that metaphor, when they're exposed, we get very, very reactive. We either usually our fight or flight mechanism activates, and we go into a pattern where one person in the relationship will experience that connection is lost, and then they'll do one of two things. They'll either fuse, which is a term for like want to reach out and reconnect with a partner, or they'll isolate, which is a term for drawing back, withdrawing, and kind of moving away to get space. And in every significant relationship I've had, and every significant relationship that my friends have had when we've looked at it, there's always been this pattern. There seems to be this magnetic polarity or this magnetic pull between these two types of people, people who want to fuse and people who want to isolate. And generally, fuses are much more physical than the isolators. They're in touch with their body. They're the kind of people who often appear to be flamboyant. I'm definitely a fuser. They generally have a variation of a childhood wound that is a variation of I'm terrified of being rejected. So their primary priority in life becomes getting love and reassurance that they're needed. And they do this mostly through sex. So these physical types are often very touchy-feely and love sex. And when the relationship, or should I say, use sex to feel love, they have sex and love as being the same thing. And so when they make love to their partners, they're actually making love. They want to experience this feeling of love in their bodies. On the other hand, the other kind of person that these people are attracted to, these isolator types, they tend to be a little more detached from their bodies. And their core fear is fear of being trapped and out of control, out of self-control, that is. And so their number one need becomes feeling safe, and thus their number one priority becomes their business and career. And there's a whole bunch of other priorities, but fourth on their priorities is relationships and sex. So you've got one type, the fusers, for whom relationships and sex is primary because that's how they get their need met to feel reassured that they're not going to be abandoned. And on the other type, these types are attracted to somebody who has relationships and sex fourth down on their value list because career and security is their primary concern because their primal fear is being out of control or being trapped. And these isolated types tend to, I could go into the science in the background of this, but we don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to ask you to take it take my word for it at the moment. These isolated types tend to use sex in a very different way too. So they tend to use sex as a way to get back in their bodies, and they don't think sex and love are the same. They think sex is a recreational fun thing, and love is a completely different thing. Whereas us fusers, we use love and sex at the same time. Now, generally, as the same thing. Now, generally, isolators, because they don't confuse sex and love, their libido tends to be less. And what ends up happening is that these two come into a relationship and they have all these apparent incompatibilities. And unless they learn to understand, and they also have the expectation, let me just backtrack one more time, that these two come into a relationship to each other and they have the expectation that the other person is just like them. And in fact, that everybody's just like them in a relationship. And that's where the trouble begins. Because they begin projecting their own needs, wants, and desires onto their partner for reassurance, for sex, for touch, and they want constant reassurance to fuses. And when connection is lost, they reach out to fuse and connect with the partner. On the other hand, these isolator types, they make the same mistake. They think everybody's an isolator. And they're like, what's the big deal? Why is this guy so needy or this girl so needy when connection's lost? So they withdraw and go, I don't want to be trapped. I need my space. I'm just going to shut down for a while and deal with this loss of connection because, like, you know, it's painful and I feel controlled. So they pull away. But the more away, the more refuser gets terrified that they're being abandoned. So they reach out even more, which causes the other isolator to pull away even more. And they go round and round and round in this vicious cycle, which ends usually either in divorce or them deciding that they're just going to survive each other for the rest of their lives because of the kids or whatever the case may be. But very rarely, unless you've got a really good therapist, is it transmuted and understood into and transmuted into something that grows you. So I've forgotten your original question, but I think I might have answered it along the way.
Oh, you did. No, you answered it very well. I thought it was fascinating. What about you, Cindy?
Yes, this is really, really fascinating stuff. I wish we had another hour to talk about it more.
Well, maybe another time.
Yeah. We'll have to have you back to go even deeper into this material. So in terms of the problems, maybe you just answered this question, but the problems that you see commonly that people face in relationships, what are the most common problems that people face when they are really wanting to build this kind of intimacy but maybe not knowing how?
I think the biggest one, Cindy, that's a great question, is this experience of thinking that their partner should be the same as them and not understanding their partner's dynamics. One of the things I did with Chelsea when she broke up with me, I was like, I was just desperate to make her feel safe. I was like, I realized that I'd failed completely in my relationship to have her feel safe, so much so that she had left me. And so I was on a mission to study everything I could about her. So I, you know, under the guise of hey, check this cool thing out, I'd send her personality tests and find out what her personality type was. She did like 5 personality tests, right, that I could sneakily got her to do. And I studied the Myers-Briggs personality type system. I studied the Enneagram. I studied human design, all these like popular typing systems that are out there now. And discovered so many fascinating things about my partner, and I became like intensely interested in who she was. And that was the big shift for me. It's like, instead of assuming that I knew who she was, I became intensely interested and started discovering her anew as a new person, somebody I didn't even know before. And like the little distinctions from the Myers-Briggs typology is this distinction between introvert and extrovert. And the way they see and experience the world is completely different. So an extrovert gets energized around people, whereas an introvert gets energized alone and actually gets drained around people. So we'd go out to social situations, and of course I'd be the extrovert bubbling around from group to group, being social and flirting here and there and flipping from group to group and kind of the center of attention, the life and soul of the party kind of guy. And she'd be kind of quietly sitting in the corner looking at her watch going, can we go home yet? I just thought this was so rude, and like I just thought she didn't understand my world, didn't want to meet my friends, didn't want to get involved. And really, like what I discovered when this was one of many, many distinctions that I now teach couples, was that she needed to recharge. She was getting drained and exhausted around all the people after a while, whereas I was getting energized around all the people. And I couldn't understand how we just couldn't make this work together. So once I got that, I started to become very aware of when she needed recharge time and give her the space to recharge, that before a social situation, she'd had a lot of time, like maybe a day without seeing me, to recharge. And then she'd be fine all night at the dinner party. But because she'd spent all the time with me already, and now I was asking her to go to groups of people, that was just like hell for her. And I discovered all these differences that I later learned to love and fall in love with. And initially I thought she was just a bit different, and I didn't quite like it, that she was so different to me. She was too different, in fact. But later I discovered that that was the difference that caused the chemistry and caused me to love and appreciate her so much, so that now when I'm with her, she's like this new discovery every day because she's so different from me. So that's one of the biggest things and mistakes I see people make is thinking that their partner is the same as them and should be and should behave and want the same thing. And I think it's kind of bring us up the hour, so I won't go into the second or third.
Yes, it's unbelievable, but we really are just about out of time. So we always like to ask our guests, is there one message that you would love to leave our audience with?
Yes, and I've said it already, and I'm going to say it again because I think it's what I'm here to give to the world, and that's that anything that isn't love is just a misunderstanding. And if there is somebody in your life right now that you're in conflict with, somebody who you're feeling anything other than love for, I'm going to challenge you, listening to this show, to step into their shoes and ask yourself, what might be their positive intention? Where are they coming from love in this? Where do they perceive that they're coming from love? And maybe their positive intention is to survive. Maybe it's to survive the situation, and the way they're behaving with you is a survival tactic. But if you look hard enough, you will always find that there's a loving intention somewhere behind the person's actions who you're upset with. And I challenge you to go all the way. Go all the way until you find it. And then go and forgive them and learn to love them again.
Well, that is a really beautiful and profound way to end this interview. Bruce, thank you so much. Everyone, we've been talking to Bruce Music about fearless intimacy, and we can't wait till the book and the movie comes out. And we thank him for sharing with us today, and we hope that all of you will come back next week.
Yes, Linda, we want everyone to join us next week, April 24th, when we'll be talking to Bob Doyle, one of the teachers from The Secret and the creator of the Wealth Beyond Reason program. That wraps up our show today. You've been listening to the Art of Joyful Living show. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Linda. Be sure to join us next week for another dose of joy.